allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, we actually have two sets of minutes today, and we're going to take the approval separately. So can I have a motion to approve our regular meeting minutes from June 16th?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And then I believe, Commissioner Moore, you are not at the special meeting that we had on July 8th. So we will ask for a special or a motion to approve those minutes, please.
So moved.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
All right, terrific. Let's move on to the financial report, please. Wade, good morning.
Good morning, Commissioners. And while we get the slides up. The downloads? Thank you. Sure, that's not the one. Oh, there we go. Gotcha. Okay, thanks. Sorry for that delay. We'll start with the consolidated results as of the end of June, so we're at the mid-year point. The first line, property tax, it's highlighted in orange. You'll see that year-to-date, our collections are up about 3.9%. That's just the first half collection. That's no indication that we'll be up 3.9% for the year. But having served as the county's fiscal officer, that is a good sign in terms of overall collections. You would not want to be lagging in your first half collections, because then that could be a sign that you're going to be down for the year overall. Local government grants and gifts, we've talked about this a few times. That negative $0.65 million year to date is primarily the result of grant revenue that we received so much last year and not this year. We're down over $4 million in federal grants this year compared to last year, and over $1 million in state grants this year compared to last year.
Now, looking at past years, would that be, would 3.8 be about where we would be? And I was not looking at last year, which was an unusual year.
Yes, Commissioner, $3.8, $4 million is much more normal compared to what we saw in 21.
Yeah.
The Tiger grants,
yeah.
The grants for trails were just an aberration to that, to the 10 years that, okay, I've been able to look at.
Okay.
Charges for services, we're up almost $1.6 million through the first 6 months. We're going to talk in more detail, but at a high level, zoo is up $368,000, golf's up $205,000, and enterprise is up $476,000 year to date compared to last year. So we're getting back to normal. Salaries and benefits, it's a negative variance compared to the prior year. And we've talked about this at all of our past meetings. We've returned to more normalized staffing in 2022. So personnel costs along with benefits are going to be up. And that's really what that is the staffing level. Operations, it's the cost of commodities, supplies, it's due to inflation, it's due to supply chain. Fuel, as we've talked about, the cost of fuel almost doubled for a period of time. We were budgeting for fuel at the end of 21 going into 22 at about $2.40 per gallon. We all know that it hit almost $5 per gallon for a period of time. So that's impacting all of that. And then you also notice construction expense at the bottom highlighted in yellow. That's down $3 million. Again, that ties to the yellow at the top. That's where the two are in yellow. As we got local government grants, whether they be from the federal government or the state, that was spent primarily on construction. So those two go hand in hand. Wrong direction. Okay, we'll go to the zoo in particular. A couple things to point out on the zoo. You'll see the two highlights, general admissions. Right now, that's a negative variance of $11,000 for the month. But I should raise the point that in May, the negative variance was almost $35,000. So we're getting back to more normalized attendance and revenue numbers at the zoo, which is great news. They had a good month, almost equal to what they were in June of 2022. The guest experience, again, it's lagging 21 by $17,700, but in May it was lagging 21 by $67,600. So we've closed that gap about over $40,000. You'll see that the Zoo Society revenue is $394,000 higher than last year. again, just as a reminder, that's because the Zoo Society adjusted how they pay us our share of memberships, and we get it quarterly. That's why you see no activity in June. So we received our first quarter and our second quarter, whereas in 21, they spread it out on a monthly basis. It was more, I'll say sporadic, whereas now it's quarterly. If you get to the bottom, salaries, again, we've returned to more normalized staffing levels at the zoo. Ops, the cost of almost everything has increased in the first 6 months of the zoo compared to 21. Commodities, food for the animals, everything is being impacted by inflation and by supply chain. One item to point out down at the bottom in CapEx, you'll see construction expense year to date is up almost $667,000. It's the orange to the far right at the bottom. And that is due to the construction related to the admin building as it moves along. We didn't have an admin building under construction last year. We had very little construction through the first 6 months at the zoo. But the zoo overall is doing well, and it's getting back to where it was pre-COVID, and our numbers are getting better. We keep going the wrong direction. Now let's talk about golf. And they had a good month, a really good month. There's no other way to put it. You can look at the top yellow line. So almost $169,000 for the month in greens fees over 21. That ties right to equipment rentals. So they're substantially higher than they were. And another thing to point out is if you look to the far right, it's not highlighted, greens fees year to date is positive, $16,242. It's the top far right. That was negative in May. This month allowed golf to go positive. So golf is positive year to date in greens fees. The orange down near the middle far right, salaries and benefits, it's the same thing that we've mentioned for others. They're at more normalized staffing levels, benefits costs. So that's going to be above what it was in 21. And then I highlighted in blue because I really wanted to point this out. Through 6 months, golf is operating at almost $1 million in net revenues and operating surplus. That compares to last year at this point, they were at $747,000. So let's say $750,000 last year compared to $1 million this year. So kudos to everyone at golf. They're just doing well. It's really, really good. We've got some information on the golf courses individually, and the way I've color coded them, so it makes it easy. If they're color coded in green, they're outperforming their 21 year to date numbers. If they're in yellow, they're within 20% of their 2021 year to date numbers. And if they're in red, the deviation from 21 to 22 is more than 20%. So you can see we've got three high performers, Little Met, Washington, and Mastic. Ironically, there are three courses that are nine-hole courses. One has the driving range, and I did have the chance to go out to Washington with my wife and hit some golf balls this past week, and there was a waiting line. I mean, as you got your tokens, you had to wait your turn to even get anywhere on the grass or on a mat to hit balls, so they were really, really busy. Big Met and Seneca are doing well, kind of close to where they were. Right now, the three that are lagging are Manikiki, Sleepy Hollow, and Shawnee Hills. The rounds played, if you look at the revenue at the top, the rounds played are comparable. It's just they've returned to more normalized staffing, which is adjusting that number. Their year-to-date performance is not what we'd hope, but I'm sure that they'll get that corrected. But overall, again, you know, golf just had a really, really good month, and they seem to have really turned the corner. And a big part of that is the weather. The weather's gotten so much better than we talked about in April, how bad it was. June was just a beautiful month.
So just a quick question. I see on all three of the reds, the revenue, and I guess you sort of mentioned this, is up, right? But obviously the expenses are up as well.
Yeah, the reds.
So you think through the year, if we continue to have good weather and we can continue to have good attendance, we should be able to even.
I think we should level out. Yeah, they, yes, Commissioner, they are making money. They're not losing money. They're just not making as much as they made last year.
Got it.
And a big part of that is you can see the staffing numbers a little bit high in each area because we've gone to more normal staffing levels. But if rounds played keep going up as they did in June, I think that number would be where we want it to be.
Yeah, that's good. It's good to see Moki.
Enterprise. concession revenues up dramatically. If you look at the month concession revenues compared to May, I'm sorry, if you look at 21 compared to 22, concession revenues are up dramatically, almost $590,000. The year-to-date total concessions are 332. What that's really showing is that it's evidence that our concessions are more open than they were. People are out, they're doing things, they're taking advantage of concessions. Boat dock rentals are down. We've talked about this previously. That was because at the end of 21, some boat dock rental fees were paid up front. It's a timing issue. Other revenues are up, and that's really due to parking. Parking's been a great revenue generator for us. So overall, the surplus for the month in enterprise was $177,000, which is good. Compared to last year, the surplus at this time was $4,000. So they're really doing well. I highlighted salaries and benefits again, because it's the same in all areas. We've returned to more normalized staffing, so that's going to make that variance compared to the prior year at this point a little bit higher. We do have some information on some of the detailed enterprise operations. The coding's a little bit different here. Green is we're outperforming the prior year, or we're very close to it. Yellow is we're lagging the prior year by a little bit. And then red, we're just lagging by a fair amount. And I'm going to show you all of the others after this page are greens. You can see that the East 55th Marina is pretty close. The East 55th restaurant is pretty close. Everyone else is green. They're doing well. Merwin's is lagging where it was last year at this point. I shouldn't say lagging. Last year, it had a negative variance of $146,000. This year, year to date, a negative variance of $222,000. But I do want to talk about Merwin's for a minute. I had the chance to have dinner there this past week with my wife and Chief Stillman. Had a great experience. The staff were wonderful. The experience was great, and it was fairly full. So I dug into this because this is a year-to-date number. The monthly number for Merwin's in June was a positive. So they had net income of $64,000. They had net income in May of $25,000. So when I started to look back, we're still recovering from some really bad months in the start of the year at Merwin's, where you're just not going to have much business in January, February, March. If we continue to have months like we had in June and people have the experience I had, that number will get back to where we need it to be. If the weather stays good again, like it was in July, we had a wonderful experience and they had a positive month. So even though it's negative year to date, Merwin's had a positive month in June. And you can see the next, everyone else is just doing extremely well. And enterprise overall, really where you want them to be, or pretty close. And so I really had no other concerns other than Merwin's, and that's really just a product of continuing to have months like we had to not recover from, but when you have a negative variance in the first couple months, it takes a number of good months to make up for it. And that is all the information I had, commissioners. June overall was a good month. There are a few little things that we're keeping an eye on, but it seems like many of our operations have turned the corner, and big kudos to golf in June. They just had a really fabulous month. Were there any questions at all?
No, very good.
Awesome. Thank you. We appreciate it. All right, moving on to new business. Brian, good morning.
Good morning, everyone. This morning, we do have a retiring guest with us, John G. Cardwell. I did not know your middle initial was G. I learned something again. John?
Good morning.
It's kind of bittersweet today to introduce John and have him before you. John really embodies so many of our core values, you know, from dignity and respect to teamwork, incredible integrity, and most importantly, guest focus. John has put a life's work into what he's brought the park. His stamp is all over the park. OEC, West Creek, North Chagrin, many exhibits at the zoo, Edgewater Park at the Lindsay Family Play Space, you name it, and he has worked there. John is also not shy about providing his opinions on things, and you know those matter. He's really stepped up over the years and provided just an integral piece of the planning and design team, and really want to recognize him and bring John up for a few words, if you don't mind. Come on, John. Never been short.
Woo.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Don't think you're really going to get here, and then you're here. I was telling a couple of people that other than weddings and funerals, today will probably be the last day I wear socks.
Socks probably the one.
Wait a
sitting
second.
Down.
You had to tell us that.
Retired.
Yeah, maybe some other things too. I don't know. But it's been a good run. I've enjoyed it. My wife Cindy's here, and my oldest Sean. I refer to this as being very lucky because we have two kids that both stayed in the area. Of course, kids. He's 33 years old now. So they're kids. But we're lucky in that they're both here, and that's going to add a lot, I think. There was a guy named Dick Klein. I don't know if people remember that name or ever heard it. But when I first started, I interned here in 1981, and Dick was here, and he told me, listen, upstart. He said, one thing you need to remember is that one goddamn it wipes out 100 attaboys. And that's been proven true time and time again. So that was kind of a good bit of philosophy he gave me, and I appreciated that. And then people ask, well, what are you going to do in retirement? And my dad always had a quote. I don't live my life by quotes, but there's a couple that I hang on to. And his was always that life's what happens when you've made other plans. So I think we're just going to kind of roll with it. And as things come up, we'll take advantage of them. And we'll keep busy, I'm certain. But great staff here. I've enjoyed these guys, gals. We've had fun. They work hard, and they play hard, too, which is a good combination. Everyone else, thank you. Appreciate the time and support. I'm out of here.
John, on behalf of Anthony J. Russo, the Board of Park Commissioners, the entire staff, you know, it's interesting reading what we call a legacy.
Okay.
30 years. Every reservation.
Pretty much, you know.
Pretty much, yes. We got to work together on Rivergate Park, and by gosh, we're going to do our job.
Yeah, that was kind of our intro.
It was. It's nice when you have staying power, right? Staying power to get things done. And that's been your legacy over the last 30 years. We're going to recognize the Lindsays today for the family play space, one of your last projects here at the Cleveland Metro Parks. That truly is a lasting legacy for the next generations. So congratulations. Please wear socks during the winter.
I will say that if you know it's time to go, the projects you worked on a while ago are now being redone.
That's over 30 years.
On the middle portion of page 9, the board will recognize John G. Cardwell for his years of service to the Cleveland Metro Parks and the greater Cleveland community.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Congratulations.
The next is 22, budget adjustment number 7. Wade?
Thanks, Brian. On page 10, you'll find budget adjustment number 7 in the amount of $3,615,138. There's detail of the adjustment later in the report or later in your packet, pages 33 to 34. But I did want to raise up one point of the 3.6 million, 3.5 is an increase from restricted funds we already had for the Tropical Bears habitat. So of the 3.6, 3.5 is Tropical Bears. For that adjustment, I would ask for approval of the adjustment. I'm sorry, budget adjustment number 7, $3,615,138.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. We're good. David, the next action item is the North Chagrin and Garfield Park Reservations Authorization to Submit Grant Applications and Commit Funds. This is through the Ohio Department of Natural Resources for the Nature Works Program. One of them is in the North Chagrin Reservation. It's in the Oak Shelter. We have had a challenge with nesting birds in the rafters. And so we're going to submit the grant to close that off, put sliding doors on it to actually hopefully keep the woodland creatures on the outside and be able to reuse the inside. Also at the Garfield Park Reservation, again, that's in Lake County. This one's in Cuyahoga County, the Garfield Pond Fishing Platform. One is in the amount of $30,700 and the other one is $37,500. So again, these are to the Ohio Department of Natural Resources for the Nature Works Program. Recommended action falls on the top portion of page 12.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next one is in Rocky River Reservation. This is an authorization to submit grant application and commit funds for the Storybook Trail Program. It's a subset of the federally funded recreational trails program. This is a very unique opportunity along this paved 0.25 mile loop trail at the Rocky River Nature Center. So again, we're going to install and fabricate storybook signs along the woodland trail loop. So the resolution is on the bottom portion of page 12 to commit funds for the Ohio Department of Natural Research through the Recreational Trails Program.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is the award of RFQ 6665 Metro Parks Lakefront Building. This is in the Lakefront Reservation. This is for professional design services. We continue to look at enhancing our opportunities for placemaking locations along our lakefront. This opportunity here has presented itself in our East 55th area. As we've been looking at CHEERS and a lot of the other study groups, this is an opportunity to enhance a more prolific connection into the lakefront. Recommended action for the professional services agreement for Osborne Engineering falls on the bottom portion of page 15.
Brian, explain the function of the building a little more here.
Well, this would be part of the rebuild of the East 55th facility where our current restaurant sits, our bait shop currently sits, and then there's planning for, as we've talked about, this community sailing center opportunity. So we're in the plans of looking at how we're going to move those plans forward to create an iconic location similar to our Edgewater Beach House.
So will that be in the same footprint as the restaurant? Okay, I got you. Thank you.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is the levy resolution to submit to the electors. Wade and Rose?
Construction.
Get antsy.
We're going to do construction? All right. I guess I went too fast. All right. Construction guaranteed. Thank you, Brittany. That was really good of you. That may be the first time you spoke at a board meeting.
She was all over it.
She was, wow.
Just keeping you in line.
We all need that. Construction guaranteed maximum price number 5, contract 15558, construction manager at risk. This is the fifth adjustment that we'll make to Neroni and hopefully final as we go into the final phases of the work at Garfield Park Reservation for the pond and stream restoration project.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
With an assist from Brittany, I very much appreciate the levy resolution to submit to the electors.
Sure. Thank you, Brian. And it's hard to imagine that 9 years has gone by since we did this in 2013, but that is the fact. And so as we did at our special meeting, we had the board did give direction to Wade to request those certified values. And the county fiscal office has given those values to us. And based upon the analysis that Wade will go into a little bit, at this point, we are ready to go forward and asking the electors of Cuyahoga County and the residents of Hinckley Township to support the replacement levy at 2.7 mils. So everything is in line with our statutes, and we would have to have this on file and requested 90 days prior to the general election. So we are well within that time period. And so procedurally, that's where we are.
Thanks, Rose. And one of the things, do we have the spreadsheet of the analysis? Thank you. I apologize, thank you for making that larger. So as the Park District has done in the past, it's incumbent upon the fiscal officer, the CFO, to say, if the electorate does approve this, what does that mean to the park district over the next 10 years? Can we continue to maintain our operations? Is the amount appropriate? Is it too little? Is it too much? And so I put together a 10-year, what I would call pro forma, taking this year's budget approved by the Board of Commissioners, which is the 2022 column. And then I took the values. Thank you. I took the values, as Rose referred to, the property tax values, and plugged those in beginning in 23, because the levy would go into effect in this fiscal year 23 to be collected in 24, assessed in 23. So what I've done, the assumptions I've used in this pro forma, because I wanted to say, is this going to allow us to end up where we would need to be to maintain our current operations? Thank you, Brian. So I had to make a couple of assumptions. The first assumption down in the expense side, salaries and fringes. I assumed an increase of 2.5% in salaries and fringes for the next 10 years of this levy. And I want to stop and just clarify that. Often people think that means a 2.5% increase in wages. As we expand our footprint, we may add staff. It just means 2.5% in that fringe and expense bucket. So it could be more staff as well as increases in wages or increases in fringe benefit costs. Capital projects, we are budgeting $15 million per year, and that's a flat number. This, again, is just a pro forma. But in comparison, when this exercise was done 10 years ago by the Park District, that capital projects number was more in the 10 to 12 range. So you can see the amount that's being invested in capital projects has gone up. Capital equipment is $3.5 million. 10 years ago, that was $2 to $2.5 million. And land is $2.5 million. 10 years ago, that number was about $1 million. The commissioners all know we've spent more than $1 million at times to acquire land, but sometimes it's given to us. But the unfortunate reality of Cuyahoga County is that land is more expensive. And we do want to acquire land when it meets our objectives. And so allocating $2.5 million a year to be available to the commissioners to consider land acquisitions was what I felt was prudent. So that would be those three line items is $21 million, or about 13% of what the revenue generated by the levy would constitute.
And Wade, all those numbers could go up as we bring more money in from outside sources, as we've done in the last 10 years.
Absolutely, Commissioner. So, if, for example, the government grants donations line is set at $10 million. If we get another $10 million grant on top of that, that would fall to the bottom, most likely in some type of capital project. It wouldn't be going to salaries and wages, for example, would be going to some kind of capital project. A couple of other assumptions that I built in when you go back to the top, I did assume a property tax increase of 1.5% every year, even though the levy stays stagnant. And then through property value appreciation, there's a reduction factor that is applied. You will have new construction coming into the county, new things being built that will add to the tax rolls. I thought 1.5% was a reasonable conservative estimate over the next 10 years. And then the last real big assumption, and this is one where I did, and I should add, I met and talked with each member of the audit committee about the assumptions I was using. I used an assumption for inflation of inflation in 2023 being 5% and 2024 being 4%, 2025 being 3%, and then 2.5% on down the line. Ironically, of our three audit committee members, one thought that might be a little bit high, one thought that might be a little bit low, and the other thought it was about right. So who knows where inflation may be? It's at 9%. Now, I'm hopeful that by the time we get to 23, over the 23 year, it'll level down to something more in the 5% range, and we'll get back to somewhere at the tail end of this 10-year projection at about a 2.5% inflation level. That's just best for everyone in the country. If it continues to stay where it is, that number drives our operations costs and our contractual costs. And if it continues to stay at, let's say, 8 or 9%, it's going to be tough, not just on the metro parks, but on everybody in this country to have that kind of increase year over year. So those were the assumptions I used. If those are accurate, what we'll end up with at the end of the projection is just over $3 million in available cash, which is about the way you want to build this model. You want to have enough revenues to continue to maintain the assets you have, not too much, but also allow yourself the opportunity for some reasonable growth and to take advantage of opportunities that present themselves. So this is the pro forma I put together, which I believe clearly shows that a replacement levy would be appropriate for this.
May I make a comment on this? This is a very challenging time to do this. And in my opinion, it's very difficult to make these predictions. And I think what is being done here is conservative, very conservative, in the sense that we're keeping it the way it would normally be. If we didn't have the ability to, if something crazy happens and the inflation continues the way it is now, and this might be because a greater percentage of the world is finding its way into the middle class, and so you have a enormous pressure on commodities. If we didn't have the ability to do another have another assessment in the middle of the program, I don't think this would be reliable. But we can do this. But I think we have to understand that this is going to be a real challenge for the Metro Park. I mean, this is not a layup by any means, because this year's inflation is, you know, it's 8% now, and so I think we have to understand that in the past public entities often just pad it up as they go. This is a challenge, and I think it's wonderful that you guys have stepped up to it, because I think these are difficult times now, but it's going to be, we got a handful here.
Well, just a question. I mean, historically, we've never varied from going in a 10-year cycle for a levy. And basically what we're doing, isn't it, with a replacement, we're not asking for a different percentage. What we're saying is we're just adjusting the base valuation, because every 10 years, property values can go up. But if we don't step up for the corresponding levy year, it really is, we start losing money in terms of the value. In other words, this is really dealing with cost of living factors. Isn't that correct?
That is absolutely correct.
So we're not trying to grab more. What we're trying to do is just say everything's gone up, and so 10 years later, we're just stepping up, and that's our base, and that'll be the basis for the next 10 years.
So what we're saying is real estate values will appreciate the same way commodities increase. And in this last 10-year cycle, that's definitely, we've been right.
Yeah.
But this next time, I'm not sure. I mean, like, people, private equity firms are buying real estate in Cleveland at record prices.
They're doing it all over.
They think it's going to go up.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of people that would not agree with that.
But we're still basically, but we're setting a level.
Yeah.
Calendar year, and that carries through then for the next 10 years.
Yeah.
It's not like a lot of other institutions are jumping in every 3 years, 2 years, depending. We don't do that. So the fact that we're trying to target and keep within those means, and I guess my other question is, what are the three big expenditures that take up really the bulk of the percentage of what we have to pay for? So people understand what we're covering.
The three big expenditures I had mentioned, capital and land, that's about 13%. Salaries and fringes are about 60-65%. And then operations are the other 25% or so. And so our three big pieces are our operations, our zoo, and operations of all of our facilities, maintaining all of our trails, maintaining all of our physical plant, the people that it takes to maintain that, and then the capital outlay that we have and land acquisition. Those are the three big pieces.
So it's really a sustainability formula. In other words, here's where we are. We want to keep it at the quality, at the level of productivity and value in terms of the physical plant and the programs we provide.
Yeah, now remember, we've got more. I'm in favor 100% of what we're doing, but I just wanted to make sure everyone understands that our neck is sticking out a little bit here. We're betting that real estate values will keep pace with these other costs. Now 80% of it is operations and salaries and wages. So we can adjust a little bit by cutting back on land acquisitions and right. CapEx and stuff like that. But we're very much, these are extremely difficult to estimate. Like, the Federal Reserve has been completely off on this. If you go back 9 months, I mean, the Federal Reserve missed this whole thing completely. Everyone else knew what was going on. So we've got some interesting times in front of us.
But this gives us some opportunity for growth, correct? I mean, as important properties become available, or, you know, we need to move into other areas. Again, we need to manage it, but if there's an opportunity.
Exactly, Commissioner. That's why I wanted to highlight the capital projects, the capital equipment in the land. Over the last 10-year proposal, we've increased that, but modestly, not a lot, a few million dollars, a little bit in land, a little bit in capital projects, a little bit in capital equipment, so that we can continue to do that. The thing that the Metro Parks has been able to do is go out and find other sources of money, and then you bring that in, and then you can do projects so that you take, let's say, your $1 million plus $3 million of other monies, grants, or other people's money, and now you can put $4 million back into this community. And they've been excellent. They've been great at doing that, especially
it's kind of like
the last
school.
4 years.
This is our core curriculum, but we can always do electives if we can find the ways to put together those dollars.
And I think the other component too is that, you know, this agency in 105 years has remained debt free. And so we live within the means of what the voters approve us to do. And they were challenged with living within that. And Sean's got a couple of quick slides to highlight just a few of the things kind of looking back of the former, and then kind of looking a little bit forward based on the strategic plans that we put together. So we'll do that, and then we'll go ahead and move forward.
I just do want to comment on the partnerships too. I think, again, Brian, you and the whole team have just built such incredible partnerships that allow us to, you know, do way more with the money that we have.
And increases in efficiency.
Absolutely.
As well.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, this levy accounts for what percentage of what we need? It's like 62-65%. Again, and that's been steady over years. So it's critical.
Morning, Commissioners. As Brian said, we want to take a quick look back over this past cycle, and then we'll pivot for a quick look forward. So we have been guided by several documents over this past cycle. First and foremost, our Emerald Necklace Centennial Plan. And in 2012, that really set the roadmap for the next decade or so. So in that plan, there were 7 key directives. Looking at green infrastructure, how we scale the park, and you'll see in some stats here how we scaled up, a focus on Cleveland and intervening suburbs, especially with our emphasis on trails and connectivity, outdoor recreation, our regional greenway system that we've made a lot of progress on, concentration on the lakefront, and then, as always, our financial sustainability. We got so much done in those first 3 years of that strategic plan that we updated in 2015, especially with the acquisition of the lakefront parks. So then we consolidated and we further focused. You know, in our 2015 update, our 5 strategic goals, again, were consolidated to protection, relevancy, connections, come out in place, or community engagement focus, and then, as always, our organizational sustainability. In 2022, so this past February, you as the commissioners adopted our second century of stewardship plan. So since February, we've been guided by our 6 core goals now, conserve, connect, welcome, engage, sustain, and innovate. And that's what will take us forward. But looking back, and we don't need to read this entire thing, we've gotten a lot done together with our partners over this last cycle. So just a few highlights. 2013, and as we go through this, you can see every year we notated the acreage that was acquired in that year. 2013, major bellwether with the lakefront reservation, work at West Creek, and of course our continued accreditation with CAPRA. 2014, work at the zoo, instituted Edgewater and Euclid Beach Live, expanded in December of that year at Wendy Park, opened East 55th. 2015, our partnership with North Royalton and Aukerman, we opened Merwin's, did additional exhibits at the zoo. We increased our community outreach through social media. Importantly, our Metro Parks Police that year were CALIA accredited. 2016, we've got the gold medal, more work at the zoo. 2017, we celebrated our 100th anniversary. We opened more trails. We opened the beach house. In 2018, additional exhibits, these wonderful exhibits we've done at the zoo, more trail work with Valley Parkway, We have our first nature-based preschool, 2019, Euclid Beach Pier, Wild Winter Lights, 2020. I think we were all surprised by COVID, but we pivoted and we found ways to continue to serve the public. Again, that 19.7 million recreational visits that year, challenging time, but we persevered and if anything, we succeeded. We had drive-through events at the zoo. We really doubled down on our commitment to diversity through our adoption of our IDEA and our diversity policy. 2021, last year, again, just an incredible year with projects and opening up of the Tiger Trails, Wendy Park Bridge, introduction of our Find Your Path campaign. And then, as you'll see at Edgewater, Lindsay Family Play Space and improvements at Huntington and at the zoo and at the towpath. So once you start to boil all these things down, what did we do over this last cycle in these past 9 to 10 years? 21% increase in annual recreational visits. We, and now since these numbers are just a little dated, we've seen over 10 million people at the zoo in that time frame. Our volunteer work now has seen over probably 1.2 million hours at this point. Golf is approaching 4 million rounds in that time frame. Annually, we know that we provide nearly $875 million a year of economic impact. We've grown the park by 10% in land area. We are now exceeding 321 miles of trail. We've added 53 in just the past cycle. Our tree planting and ecological uplift programs continue to move forward. And now we are serving people in 49 communities in 6 counties. And our educational programs continue to serve a vast majority of people. Just a quick highlight on real estate, because so much effort has been put into this with Rose and Kyle and the entire team. As of this morning, we are at 24,444 acres. That represents in the past 9.5 years, 150 transactions. So it's amazing. You heard from Wade how in Cuyahoga County, you know, we are built out and land is expensive, but through partnerships and being very strategic, we have made some incredible inroads in what we've done to grow and connect the parks. And then to wrap up, we also talked about how we set aside specific amounts for capital projects and land purchases and partnerships. But that is then, we'll say, through partnership, leveraged through the incredible work of Natalie and the team, and partnerships like with the Lindsays. So over this period, $79 million raised to help in all of these efforts that then bring this gold medal award-winning park district to the community. So as we look forward, we're guided by our second century of stewardship plan. I know in the board meetings coming up yet this late summer and fall, we'll have some additional information for you. But I think it was really kind of fun to look back at what has occurred over this past cycle.
Very nice. And we're still the reigning national gold medal champions.
Yes. Yes, we are.
That's incredible. Thank you.
Sean, thank you and the entire team putting that together. If there are no further questions, the recommended action falls on the mid top portion page of page 18 to submit to the electorate of Cuyahoga County and Hinckley Township our levy request.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
We'll move into the tabulation of award and bids. Just to highlight, we are doing pavement improvements in Bedford Reservation, Big Creek Reservation, and North Chagrin Reservation. We're also continuing with maintaining of our golf courses, the XGD systems. We are picking up a few more golf carts. Our Seneca property is continuing to exceed our expectations and trying to meet the demand there. Services for our scanner and stream bank stabilization at South Chagrin Reservation. Those all are tabulated on page 19.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Vouchers and payroll.
Thank you. Commissioner Joel, note on page 29, resolution 22-07-196, moving for approval of the payment of various items that total $12,556,539.26. They're all detailed for you on that page 29.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
You also see on page 30, another resolution 22-07-097, moving again for approval of vouchers and payments, this one in the total amount of $171.
Move to approve.
Second.
Commissioner Moore will abstain.
Thank you.
Yes.
All in favor?
Aye.
Terrific. All right, moving on to public comments. Marty, welcome, please.
Morning.
Good morning.
That was a very useful discussion on the levy, and I appreciate the depth of discussion. As usual, you're going to get my thoughts. The yield from the proposed levy would be $95 million a year, more than doubled 13 levy revenue. Now in the midst of greatly increased property values, the new yield would be locked in, even if home values fall. If the economy should crash, taxpayers would be severely impacted even without an increase. The increase in the 2013 levy was justified as being needed to, quote, make up for state cutbacks and lower property values that otherwise could cripple upkeep and delay upgrades, unquote. But the renewal portion of that levy was not reduced by the lower valuations, which is exactly why they did it that way. Decreased revenue is certainly not the case now. COVID caused and continues to cause challenges. However, grant money has been hauled in hand over fist. Yes, your salaries and costs have gone up, but that impacts taxpayers' budget the same way. Metro Parks has undertaken so much, so fast, with little consideration for future maintenance and staffing needs. Dumping those costs on taxpayers now may have ugly consequences. Enterprise was promoted as decreasing reliance on taxpayers. Obviously, that is not the case. Beyond that, there was a tax-exempt bond filing fee paid in May. Is a bond issue being considered? Will money be borrowed for the Hinckley Dam repairs, or will Metro Parks continue to be debt-free, as is so often emphasized? Surely $95 million a year would allow for the upkeep and upgrades that were noted, if not addressed, in 2013. Yes, Metro Parks served many new and old visitors very well during the peak of the pandemic. The greatest successes were in the most basic ways, simply providing safe and attractive natural areas where people could walk and gather outdoors. Such uses still top the list of attractions. They don't compete with private enterprise and are inexpensive compared with, for example, hiring entertainment to draw visitors in the overcrowded restaurant scene. Happily, we keep learning about the early attractions of the park system. They continue to stand the test of time, even as some newer ventures fall short. Cleveland Metro parking lots won't generate that kind of loyalty. Thank you.
Just to clarify, the tax exempt filing document, that was related to the Dell computer contract. And because of the way that the financing leases are defined, and because we are a public entity, Dell has the opportunity to take some of the interest. They don't have to pay interest on some of that financing under that lease regarding those computers. So bonds have not been issued and they're not being contemplated at this time.
Thank you.
I just want to say one thing. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but I think it was Abraham Lincoln who said that if you look at something critically enough, you will find fault. And so be it. That's the viewpoint of some. But I think what we've tried to do is anything but move too quickly or throw away the future. The fact of the matter is we do serve a large public, an ever-changing public, and I think we've been a very effective, conscientious, and thoughtful in trying to adapt and yet still maintain the core values of this operation now in 105 years and running. It's just a shame to hear such negativity in the face of all of the effort that the people who work for the Metro Parks, the people who volunteer for the Metro Parks, and the people who enjoy the Metro Parks and all that we offer is all a very positive story. And it's great to trivialize different awards, but those awards don't just happen. Grants just don't fall off trees like cantaloupes off a truck. These are efforts, hard-won results. And I can't think of an organization that does more to try to serve the public well.
I said, thank you, Commissioner. All right, moving on to our information briefing items, please.
We are proud to bring forward an outstanding contributor award through the National Association of County Park and Rec. Natalie, can you bring our guest forward, please?
Thank you, Brian. Good morning, Commissioners. I have Teresa and Brett Lindsay here with us this morning. We're so glad they could join us here in person. It was a perfect meeting for them to attend with John's retirement and such. But of course, I'm going to let them say a few words. But I just have to say personally, what a joy it's been to work with them on this project. I live near Edgewater Park, and I walk by their play space probably three times a week at least. And I can just think of one word, and it's joy. It's just absolute joy. I know it's brought them joy. And the leadership that they provided in their own philanthropy, they also invited others to participate, which also was a critical way for the park to gain more friends through this process and allow them to participate in this really important community asset. So, Brett, Teresa, do you want to say a word?
Sure. Thank you guys so much. For us, I think this project was probably one of the most fun things that we've done. And for us specifically, it's how do we bring our own kids? We've got five kids that all live in Northeast Ohio. We've got one granddaughter and one on the way. And I think the older that we get, the more realization that play is important and trying to make certain that there's a place for people to play. And then second, kind of in the world that we live in today, where it feels like everything is so kind of head to head and head butting all the time, you can go to a park and see kids playing of all socioeconomic levels, all different areas, all political views that they probably don't even know they have yet, and just watch kids play. And so I think for us and our future plans as it relates to philanthropy and working with Metro Parks, it's all about play. Because for us, I think that's what really kind of distinguishes the ability for kids to make things better. And the whole cheesy cliche, kids are our future. But if the kids don't play together, I think it's going to be really hard to get them to actually have conversations and communicate and work together as they get older.
Wow. Awesome.
Yeah, I'll just add to that. So well said. We're really grateful, actually, to be a part of this. I know that you're expressing your gratitude, but I have to say that we're the ones that are truly blessed here to be able to partner with such an incredible organization. We love the Cleveland Metro Parks. We love what you stand for. We love everything that you do. And so for us to be able to come alongside and just have a very small contribution to something so wonderful. And I have to say, I cannot tell you the number of times since this has opened, the people that have reached out to us, people that have contacted us on LinkedIn, text messages, social media, whatever, and just saying, hey, here's a photo of my kids playing at the park. And, you know, just so many times that's happened to us. And quite frankly, it's because of you and your partnership that we were able to, like I said, play a very small role, but we think a very impactful role on a lot of lives, families, children. We love the Metro Parks. We obviously love the play space, and we just want to thank you so much for allowing us to be a part of it.
Do you want to run a quick few of the slides through? And this is what it's all about.
Wow. Look at that.
Congratulations. Just to add a word, as a parent of an only child, this interaction in the nature play space is so extremely important, by which kids get a chance to interact and have that element of risk reward. This was not the traditional playground. This is a one of a kind. And so we thank you for your support.
Thank you so much.
The next information item we have is a history moment, summer camps. Judy McKeegan is going to present the 1920s through the 70s.
Thank you.
Good morning, Commissioners. Oh, and well, the Lindsays are gone, but I wanted to say I led a history hike through Edgewater a couple weeks ago, and we went by the play, and I was telling him about this and said how much the kids enjoyed it, and two of the adults on my hike said, "Kids, I want to go play that." So summer camps. I do this as a regular program that's about, 45 minutes long, so I condensed it into a few minutes here. Almost before the ink was dry on our first deed in Rocky River, we had people that were coming to use the new Metro Parks or Metropolitan Park District as a place for overnight summer camps. These camps were not run by the Metro Parks. They were run under the auspices of the Cleveland Welfare Federation, which was an umbrella group that involved people like the YMCA, the Settlement Houses, the Boy Scouts, the Girl Scouts, the Campfire Girls, all these different groups. Often the construction and thing was done by groups like the Kiwanis and the Rotary Club. So it was truly, truly an early partnership. The first one was actually from the Phyllis Wheatley Association. They later moved out to what became Virginia Kendall State Park and is now part of CVNP. But their first camp, and it was in, from what I can understand, 1919. I mean, it was like when we first hit land, these people were down here by the old Lorraine Bridge. That's the Rocky River there, and that's the old Lorraine Bridge. There's still a bridge there if you go down from the hospital. And you can see that this type of camp, where they wore their midi blouses with their little ties, were basically tents. They had like a wooden pallet floor underneath them. Very primitive. They were swimming in the Rocky River. There's a little more close-up of the camp with one of the gardeners, and then these two. Look at this. This is talk about joy. And right. They took a plank and they put it on a thing and made a teeter totter.
Nice. So risk management would not like that.
My dream would be to find some young women that went there, but they'd all be like 90 to 100 years old now. So I have not been able to do that. The other thing was, I'm not going to talk a lot about Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts today. That's a whole other program. But these were some Girl Scouts, early Girl Scouts, also over in Lorraine. I think in that same general area, it's hard to tell. The camps have changed many, many times over the years. I think our safety director would not be happy with those cabins up on those very flimsy locations. So I'm glad he's not here to see that. The YMCA, as I said, the first Y camp was over at Euclid Creek. It was a Y under the auspices of the YMCA. And again, sort of those half tent, half cabins with the wooden floors. And this one has a few more upstanding, whatever it supports, but also still very primitive. The bridge there that they said the boys actually built that. So, and these were boys. This one was a boys' camp, a YMCA camp. And you can see them swimming. They just dammed up Euclid Creek, and that's where they were swimming. There's a little bit close of it. Notice it was called the swimming pool. A very interesting long-lived camp was in Brecksville, originally called the Neighborhood Association Camp, another settlement house over on the east side of Cleveland, eventually became Caramu. But it first was called Neighborhood Settlement Camp, and it was in that section. It eventually moved down to about here, but that was their first place. This was the Jelliffs. That was the name of the people that put this camp together, that ran the settlement house in the very new, at that time, occupation of social workers. They were from, I want to say, from Hiram and or Oberlin College. They opened this settlement house and they brought these kids down here. The kids played, it was either free or they paid about $1 or $2, which in the 30s was money to find. They would literally load them in trucks, again, safety not a factor at that time, and bring them down to the camp, swimming in Chippewa Creek, camping and doing all the things that campers, but they had also what I assume was an old farmhouse that was already there that they used for the camp staff. And this building, which I see the inside of, but I am really not sure exactly where it is. It doesn't say in our photo albums. I think it's interesting that these kids are at the piano because Caramu Camp gave rise, eventually the kids were dancing, they were doing theater, gave rise to Caramu Theater, which is still an award-winning African-American theater in Cleveland. And I think I've got, yeah, one more. One summer, a young woman named Coretta Scott was a counselor at this camp. She went on to marry Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. So she was here when she was between her freshman and sophomore years at Ashland College, or not Ashland, I think it's Antioch College. So this is very faint, I know, but I wanted you to see this is the extent of this camp that was planned called Ottawa Lodge. Again, another settlement house in Cleveland. And this one was at what is now our Ottawa picnic area. And you can see there was cabins up here. There's, you know, a staff meeting. It was very, very, very extensive, open to big fanfare. With the raising of the flag and the obligatory band, which we'll see more of later at another camp. These are cabins. Now we don't even have tents, right? We've got cabins with bunk beds. This camp was sometimes used by girls, sometimes used by boys, again, from the settlement house, university settlement house. And, you know, Mr. Stinchcomb was there for the ribbon cutting, though they never took pictures of real, I don't know if they actually cut ribbons then, they just called them dedications. But you may recognize that picture of him because that's the one we used to make those Stinchcomb cutouts that we had all over during the centennial. And there's one on the wall in the office of the archives right now. So he watches over all my work. River Road Camp. I just had a question the other day. Somebody said, was the River Grove picnic area near a camp called River Road? Yes, it was. What is now our River Grove picnic area, North Chagrin Reservation, was the River Road Y Camp. This was one of our longest lived camps. It opened up as Hikewan Camp. They like to made up Indian names in the early 20s and 30s and name all the camps after them. So it was originally Hikewan, was run by the American Legion. Then the Y took it over. This is from, like, I want to say this is 1934, I think, this picture. So very long-lived camp. These are just some pictures of kids doing camp things or sitting around the campfire, taking a nature walk. And that child is like got a mosquito bite. And he looks like he's, you know, with his shirt off there. Crafts. Anybody go to summer camp? And they kept us busy making those plastic lanyards and yeah. It's like, it was just a wooden lamps or ashtrays. I weighed ashtrays. I go, what a great thing for kids to learn to make. I don't think we do that anymore. My dad used it for years. And of course, eating. And actually, maybe not so much these Y camps. These were a different audience, but some of the earlier camps that were in the neighborhoods where the kids didn't have access to fresh air, fresh greenery, and fresh food, it was very important that they fed the kids. And they used to weigh them at the beginning of camp and then at the end to make sure that they'd gained weight. So fed them lots of white bread because that helped.
Yeah.
And chores. You had to learn chores at camp. This is such a posed picture. I can't imagine those children were that happy.
Smiling mother.
I'm like, okay, smile for the camp. Pretend you love.
Let me hold
not your cabin. And polishing. Those do not look like they're his boots. Some counselor said, here, I'm going to teach you how to polish boots. So it'll be fun. Yeah. Yep. And of course, peeling potatoes. You got to peel potatoes. And you have to put your tongue like, you know, because that helps you concentrate. So
nice night.
But they also had fun. Here's the canteen. You know, they're up there maybe getting some paddles to go play ping pong or buying a candy bar or ice cream with their little bit of money that they brought to camp. Those were all boy pictures. There were some girl. Oh, wait a minute. I forgot. Swimming pool. Remember the old primitive swimming pool? You know, here at Rocky River, there at Euclid Creek. Well, this one, they built a real swimming pool. Jack Hines, right at the beginning of the World War II, Jack Hines Company, fascinating Cleveland history if you ever get a chance to find out what the Jack Hines Company involved in creating parts for airplanes and stuff during the war, very big employer and very, very interested in giving back to the community. And you will notice this picture was in, I think it was late June, maybe early July. It had to be hot because look at Bill Stinchcomb without a jacket. I have never seen him at any other official function without his suit jacket and his vest. And he has neither. He still has his tie on and his sleeves are down. Notice these gentlemen are being very, very casual here. And these kids are over here going, stop talking so we can swim.
Where was
and
that?
There they were. You know what? I did not put a picture of what it looks like today, but if you go into the River Grove and you're standing at the like the Chestnut Shelter and everything, if you look, then if you're looking back away from the road and you look to your left, the pool was over in that. There's like just a big green grassy area now. That's where the pool was and stayed there till the 1970s. But there were girls at this camp. So here's some pictures of the girls at enjoying River Road Camp too. We just didn't, they're obviously not polishing boots or whatever. So there's a girl, that could be my mom and her friends. I just think that's such a cool picture. I will say, well, I'll tell you later. This is another picture. So the last one I want to talk about is Camp Cheerful, which of course is still the only one that we have on our camp, or on our grounds that is an overnight camp officially. It started out with this gentleman here, Captain Arthur Roth, who was in the 1920s as part of the police in Cleveland. He noticed children getting hurt by traffic because people didn't know, the kids didn't have safety rules about looking right and left and all the things that we grew up knowing. And he started basically a program to teach them about that. And then he became the juvenile officer, and he wanted to get the kids, as he put it, before we have to send them away to jail, let's get them and get them to not join a life of crime and take them to camp. So he built, he worked with this, he worked with this safety director here, a little guy named Elliot Ness, you may have heard of. So Captain Roth came out, they got this land out in the, what was then the South Rocky River Reservation, and this farm land, and decided to build a camp there. They also had a swimming pool, a nice little square official swimming pool. And in 1939, it became known as the Paradise Valley Camp. Now, these kids were brought in from at-risk neighborhoods, mostly Polish and Italian neighborhoods, and put into Boy Scout troops that then went to this camp, and they called it a Boy Scout camp. Because the best way to keep kids off the street and from being criminals is to teach them to play the accordion. So. I shouldn't make fun of accordions. Accordions are great, but and they were very, very popular then. That camp lasted for a few years, and then there was some grumblings among the citizens of Cleveland that taxpayer money shouldn't be going to put kids to camp. They should put them in jail instead. So, but taxpayer money was actually never going to this. It was done through donations, but they just couldn't get people to get on board with it. So by the mid-1940s, a group called at that time the Society for Crippled Children, now Achievement Centers for Children, came and did a couple weeks at the camp and eventually took over the camp, and it became Camp Cheerful, a place for children who were had disabilities, were differently abled. Most of them had had polio or congenital defect, like cerebral palsy, maybe. Yeah, that type of like the March of Dimes. And so they wanted a place for these kids to be able to get out in the outdoors and have fun, just like the other abled kids. They built these campfires that were up high enough that if you were in a wheelchair, you could, you know, toast your marshmallow or your hot dog, or even this child is actually in, looks like in a hospital bed type situation. So they really thought about that. Briefly, however, it was also used in the 1940s as a safety camp to teach these traffic monitors, kids how to, what were they called?
Safety patrol.
Safety patrol, thank you. I was in the library helping people check out books. I wasn't doing this. So, because I'm a big nerd, right? So I think this was interesting because Captain Roth was gone by then, but this harkens back to the work that he did in the 1920s. It's still Camp Cheerful, of course, is run today, is the only one that kids actually go and stay overnight, but it is such an important thing, and again, through a partnership. So that's the story. I just wanted to say that these kids are sitting at a campfire behind what is now our Oak Shelter. You can see the little amphitheater if you go, again, to River Grove. You can still see where kids sat. And so my story may not be as fun as the campfire stories, but I think it's an interesting one. So thank you.
Judy, yes. What happened to the camps? In other words, how did the movement?
Well, in the 1960s, about 64, 65, the board voted to not allow any more camp buildings to be built on park grounds. A lot of the camps were starting to move out to their own. The Boy Scouts, the Girl Scouts started to have their own camps that they owned on land they owned, and that kind of, the settlement houses started to have a different focus. I think it got too expensive to bring kids, and then there were safety considerations, you know, all of those things fell into play. River Road Camp actually in the mid 70s had a camp for moms for a while where you could come. They said it was like the Golden Door Spa in California, but not as expensive. So you could come get they had a sauna and they learned exercise, yoga and stuff. So they did that for a while, trying to keep. But I know that when I went to Y Camp in the 60s, they had bought their own land and that kind of. And then the board decided we are not in necessarily the business of running these. It can be better used for other purposes too. So it was just a whole combination things. So
it's really cool.
All right.
Right.
Thank you, Judy. Excellent job. There is no old business. The next regularly scheduled meeting is Thursday, August 18th at 8 a.m. and there is an executive session.
Is there a motion to go into executive session for the purposes of purchase and acquisition of real property?
There is.
Excellent.
So moved.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Debbie Berry.
Yes.
Bruce Brinker.
Yes.
Dan Moore.
Yes.
Terrific. We will not take any action.
We have returned from executive session. No action has been taken. Do we have a motion to adjourn the meeting?
We do. So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thanks, everybody. Have a great day.